I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's March 17th, and we have a lot to talk about. In a moment, I'll be sharing some updated information about the coronavirus and MS, some detailed recommendations about what to do if you're on a disease-modifying therapy, and some helpful and credible resources that you can rely on. I guess I have to add that word credible because, as you might expect, there's already a lot of sketchy information out there. For instance, over the weekend, I came across a list of coronavirus guidelines from Stanford University. Except the list wasn't from Stanford University, and the guidelines weren't real. But anyone with the most basic graphics application and the ability to take a simple screenshot of a website can create this stuff in a matter of minutes. And we already know better than to believe everything we read, and that probably goes double for everything that you read online. So checking your sources, especially when you're looking at information that can impact your health and your well-being, is just super important. I can promise you that the only information that I'll ever share on this podcast is information that's been well vetted and has legitimate science behind it. That's always been my guideline in determining what I will and won't talk about on the podcast, and I want to make sure that you can take comfort in knowing that. My guest today is Dawnia Baines. Dawnia is an MS support group leader, an MS activist, and last month, Dawnia was recognized by the Southern California Nevada chapter of the National MS Society as the Inspirational Person of the Year. I've known Dawnia for a few years through our MS advocacy efforts, and just 2 weeks ago, I spent time with Dawnia in Washington, D.C. at the MS Society's Public Policy Conference. We're going to talk about Dawnia's experience attending the Public Policy Conference and our day on Capitol Hill for the first time. And we're also going to talk with Dawnia about her support group for teens who are living with MS. But before we get to my conversation with Dawnia Baines, there are a few other things that you should know about. Last week, my guest, Dr. Abby Hughes, discussed some of the ways that you can best manage the anxiety that most everyone is experiencing to some degree because of the coronavirus pandemic. And several of you have gotten in touch with me and asked if there was any information about what you should do if you're taking one of the MS disease-modifying therapies. And the National MS Society's National Medical Advisory Committee has published some recommendations. First, they advise anyone living with MS to follow the CDC's guidelines and the additional recommendations for people who are at greater risk of getting very sick from the coronavirus. You've heard these recommendations before, but given what's at stake, they bear repeating. So stock up on your supplies, and that includes extra prescription medications, any over-the-counter medications that you're taking, medical supplies that you might need, as well as the household items and groceries that you would need if you were staying at home for a couple of weeks. Don't forget to take everyday precautions, like washing your hands with soap and water. Avoid touching high-touch surfaces, like the buttons in an elevator, door handles, and handrails. And start elbow bumping instead of shaking hands. Avoid touching your face, your nose, eyes, and mouth. Obviously, avoid contact with others who are sick. Avoid crowds, avoid non-essential travel, and please avoid taking that cruise. And if you learn that there is a coronavirus outbreak in your local community, stay home as much as possible. I should also mention that based on current recommendations from the CDC, the National MS Society has canceled all of their in-person events, programs, and state action days scheduled between now and April 12th. Beyond these guidelines that really apply to everyone, the MS Society's National Medical Advisory Committee recommends that people living with MS should continue their disease-modifying therapies and discuss specific risks with their neurologist prior to stopping a disease-modifying therapy. So the order of activity is important here. please have that conversation with your neurologist before you stop your disease-modifying therapy, and not the other way around. The Society's National Medical Advisory Committee also recommends that before you start a cell-depleting disease-modifying therapy, and that means Lemtrada, Mavenclad, Ocrevus, and Rituxan, or before you start a disease-modifying therapy that carries specific warnings of a potentially severe increase in disability after stopping, and that means Gilenya and Tysabri, you and your neurologist should consider the specific risks and benefits to you of starting those disease-modifying therapies right now. And while these recommendations are the expert opinion of the National MS Society's National Medical Advisory Committee, they've also been endorsed by the Consortium of Multiple Sclerosis Centers, the Accelerated Cure Project for MS, CanDo MS, the International Organization of Multiple Sclerosis Nurses, the Multiple Sclerosis Association of America, the Multiple Sclerosis Foundation, and the United Spinal Association. As I said at the top of the podcast, these are guidelines that you can and you should trust. You can find them online at nationalmssociety.org/COVID-19. And if you'd like to review them, you'll find that link in today's show notes. Speaking of disease-modifying therapy, the FDA is expected to approve ozanimod by the end of this month. Ozanimod is a daily capsule that treats relapsing forms of MS by preventing immune cells from entering the brain and causing inflammation. It works in a manner similar to Gilenya and Mayzent. Ozanimod is manufactured by Celgene, a recently acquired subsidiary of Bristol-Myers Squibb, and they claim that ozanimod has a better safety profile and fewer side effects than either Gilenya or Mayzent. The commercial name for ozanimod is going to be Zeposia, and as I mentioned, FDA approval is expected in the next week, and approval from the European Medicines Agency is expected in June. Of course, like so much going on in the world today, these dates and deadlines are subject to change due to the impact of the coronavirus pandemic. Last week, pharmaceutical manufacturer Medday announced that their large clinical trial evaluating high-dose biotin in treating primary and secondary progressive MS had failed to show that the treatment led to any improvements in disability. The clinical trial involved 642 people with progressive MS who hadn't experienced recent relapses, or non-active progressive MS. The study participants received either three daily doses of 100 milligrams of high-dose biotin or a placebo, and the endpoint of the study was an improvement in disability determined by either a lower EDSS score or a reduction in the time it took the patient to walk 25 feet. And there was no improvement in either of these measures when they were compared to the group of patients receiving a placebo. So you can consider this a failed outcome, or you can appreciate that scientists learned what doesn't work in improving disability among people living with progressive MS. And very often, science is all about failing your way forward. Just ask Thomas Edison, who famously failed to invent the electric light bulb 10,000 times before finally succeeding. We know that it's smart to begin disease-modifying therapy as soon as possible. Research has shown that disease-modifying therapies can not only limit relapses today, but they can also limit future disability progression. But a research team in Canada has published the results of a study that shows that not everyone living with MS is always going to act in their own best interest. The research team evaluated 332 people living with MS who were being treated at an academic MS center in Toronto, Canada, from January 2015 through May 2018. So of these 332 people, neurologists recommended that 256 begin disease-modifying therapy. And among those 256, 80, or about a third of them, chose not to follow their neurologist's recommendation. Of the 80 patients who chose not to start disease-modifying therapy, 46% said it was a matter of personal preference. 22% wanted to take a more conservative approach to managing their MS. And about 19% chose to pursue natural homeopathic medical approaches to managing their MS. Now, of the 166 patients who did begin disease-modifying therapy, 21 stopped treatment against their doctor's advice. Among these 22 patients, 62% said they stopped due to adverse side effects, and 19% said it was just their personal preference. Of course, everyone is a captain of their own particular MS journey, and every captain knows how important it is to get all of the facts from credible experts to ensure that their journey is as pleasant and uneventful as possible. If you'd like to review the details of this study, I'll include a link in today's show notes. A couple of weeks ago, I attended the MS Society's Public Policy Conference, and I spent our day on Capitol Hill visiting several congressional offices, talking about the legislative policy issues that matter to families affected by multiple sclerosis. One of the people that I had the pleasure of spending that day with was Dawnia Baines. Dawnia was diagnosed with MS in 2006, and her father is living with primary progressive MS. Besides being an MS activist, Dawnia facilitates a very special MS support group. And last month, the Southern California Nevada chapter of the National MS Society named Dawnia their Inspirational Person of the Year. In a moment, we'll meet my guest, Dawnia Baines. Dawnia Baines is an MS support group leader, an MS activist, and last month, Dawnia was recognized by the Southern California Nevada chapter of the National MS Society as the Inspirational Person of the Year. I've known Dawnia for a few years through our MS advocacy efforts, and just 2 weeks ago, I spent time with Dawnia in Washington, D.C. at the MS Society's Public Policy Conference. Welcome to the podcast, Dawnia.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
I want to talk a little about your experience at the Public Policy Conference, but before we get to that, can you tell me why advocating on behalf of yourself and everyone else affected by MS is important to you?
Well, it's extremely important for me because I was diagnosed with MS in 2006, but also my father was diagnosed with primary progressive MS, and so he is in Pittsburgh. And so to be able to go to the public policy conference in Washington, it was awesome to meet people that are in Pennsylvania, that are in, well, all over the world, that we're all pushing to help one another and make sure that these bills get passed so that we can move towards finding a cure for MS.
Well, you and I both live in California. Full disclosure, we probably live less than 30 minutes from each other. And we've paid visits to our state legislators in Sacramento before, but this was your first visit to Washington, D.C. So as a first timer, what were your impressions of the public policy conference?
Honestly, I was amazed. I loved seeing people from all over the country that's doing what I'm doing here in California. And to just hear their stories, meet people with similar stories. No, I've never met anyone with an MS story that's the exact same. So it's just fun to hear, you know, what's going on around the country. And even, you know, I met someone in Canada, and that was great to see what they're doing there. But the conference, the public policy conference, it was eye-opening for me, too. Because I'm used to going to the Capitol here, but to see how huge the Capitol is in D.C., I was like, oh my gosh, thank God they got a scooter, because I would probably still be walking up there had I not had it. But it was great. It was nice to not feel like you have to figure out how you're going to get around that. It was, you know, very accessible. The amount of care they took, honestly, it blew me away, like even down to minor details. where, you know, the normal person would miss that. So I loved, you know, learning and advocating and all that, making friends actually too. That was great.
So you and I met with several members of Congress or their health policy experts. I'm wondering, were you pleased, disappointed, or surprised by anything that happened during those meetings?
When I look back, I was very pleased at the meetings and what, how attentive people were, and that they were willing to hear about MS if they didn't know about MS, and also hearing the support, especially for the person in my district, that they, you know, they knew about it. And even in the past, they've been very supportive in with MS and the research and even different activities. I appreciate that.
What do you think was your biggest takeaway from the public policy conference and our day on Capitol Hill?
I guess for the biggest takeaway is to always be prepared, because sometimes, in some cases, probably our last meeting, they know the, I don't want to say rules, but laws and what's going on a little bit better than we do. So I think had we not been prepared beforehand by everyone, that would have been a very awkward meeting with how much she knew about what was going on. And so fortunately, the society, you know, prepared us properly, and we had so much detail that we weren't thrown off by what was being asked of us and being said. So, you know, I was glad you were there, because of course, when it was had a moment, I just turned to look at you and smile like, okay, like, help, please. Thank you.
We're used to having each other's back. That's nothing new. I was happy to be there. I want to talk about something else that you're very involved in, and that's a support group for teens who are living with MS. So what do you see as the biggest benefit of participating in an MS support group?
Yeah, well, I wish you could see the big smile on my face, because the teens are my babies. Well, let me say this. When I was first diagnosed, I was never a part of a support group. And part of that was because when I thought of a support group, it was the older people that were focused on retiring and all that. And I'm in my 20s, you know, ready to live, do some stuff and meet people my age. And so when I learned that there were teenagers diagnosed with MS and there was nowhere for them to go, I'm like, okay, I can't imagine being a teenager with nowhere to go. And I have this disease that I really don't know what it is. And I'm trying to, whether it's go to college or whatever you decide to do. But because of the teen I met in California, I was able to start the support group. And so that led to another young lady coming. And so it just grew. But the awesome thing is that the group is not just in California now. We have someone in Pennsylvania. We have someone in Arizona. And I'm able, actually, to connect them with the young lady that's in North Carolina that's going to help them out with becoming advocates as well as a teenager.
Wow, that's great. How long have you been involved in your teen support group?
It has been almost 2 years, actually.
And what have you learned from interacting with the teenagers in your group? I'm sure they've learned a lot from you, but what have you learned from them?
The biggest thing I've learned from them is to keep pushing, you know, and to watch them not allow this diagnosis to get them down. But I think we mutually do that for one another, because, you know, part of starting the group is because I want them to keep living. You know, I don't want them to think, oh, no, I'm diagnosed with MS, I can't do anything. And so for them, it's been good for them to see another teen diagnosed with MS. And we actually have a group where they're able to talk with one another. And so they learn from each other what they do. They learn about different plans that they have available for them. It's definitely a mutual relationship. We benefit both ways. And it's funny because I'm like, those are my children. And I, you know, make sure that they're not doing too much, because naturally, being a teen in high school, and we have one that just started college, you're going to want to socialize and go to all the games, go to the dances, do this, this, and this. And so I have them stop and evaluate, like, okay, do you want to have one good day or do you want to have a good week? And so I think that's probably the biggest thing that they get from me, is that I make them slow down but still have fun. Example, one of the young ladies wanted to go to a game, you know, football game, And I said, you can either go, like if you're feeling okay or whatever, go to the end of the game or go to the beginning of the game. So what is it like, what is your goal of the game? If you want to go out after the game, then come a little bit after halftime or whatever it may be and then go. But I'm very into them not stressing themselves out or doing too much.
Well, since geography doesn't really matter, how can someone else get involved in your support group?
The group is listed with the National MS Society. It's listed under the 17 and under group in Southern California. And so my number is on there and people have called, said I have a child, can, you know, they talk or whatever. I don't care where in the world people are. I'm more so just making sure that other teens have a support system. So I can be found through the society. All of my social media stuff is Dania Marie. So I don't mind people reaching out to me that way. I just think it's important to have a community. And I know, you know, being a teen diagnosed with something can be lonely, especially if your friends don't understand. And something that I hear is that a lot of times their friends forget that they were diagnosed with MS. And of course, they want to, you know, forget or say, like, I can do this, I can do that. But, you know, sometimes it's a little too much. But yeah, I don't, yeah, wherever you are in the world, it's fine. We've even had one of the guys, he was in Taiwan and we FaceTime. That's what we've been doing. We FaceTime and we'll do Zoom soon or whatever we decide to do. But it doesn't matter where you are. Just please, I would love to connect with other teens that are looking for someone to talk to and other people diagnosed as a teenager. And I do bring into the group people that were diagnosed with MS as a teen and are now working. Some have graduated from college. Some, actually one, she studied to be a doctor. So I just want them to see, hey, I can keep going. I don't have to shut it down because of this diagnosis.
Well, that's so important. And I'll be sure to put some of that contact information that's listed on the MS Society's website right into the show notes for this episode to make it easy for people to reach out to you.
Awesome. That would be wonderful. I appreciate that a lot.
And I also want to congratulate you on being named the Inspirational Person of the Year by the Southern California Nevada chapter of the MS Society. I was lucky enough to be in the audience when you received your award. How does it feel to be honored that way?
No, thank you a lot. I really appreciate that. Honestly, it's everything I do, I don't do it for any award or anything like that. So when I got the email about it, I was kind of shocked because it said congratulations. And I'm like, I didn't complete a class. Like, what is this? And when I read it, I'm like, no way, no way. But it means a lot to me. I actually have the award right here on my dresser, and it just makes me want to work a little harder. And one of the things I do with the teens, I tell them all the time, because most of them came to the award ceremony. I think you got to meet some of them too, but I told them, I was like, I want you guys to be me in a few years. I want, you know, you to be getting these awards and going to, because they're actually going to go to State Action Day in a few months. And so I want them to do things like that and to keep pushing and to reach out. So that is definitely a huge honor. Very humbling.
Well, Dania, I don't always get to spend time talking with the Inspirational Person of the Year. So congratulations on receiving your well-deserved honor. Thanks for giving so generously of your time in your advocacy work and the important work you're doing in your teen support group. And thanks for talking with me today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on your show. This is an honor. So this is an awesome show. So thank you for what you're doing. I really appreciate you.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And if you have a friend or a family member who might also enjoy listening to the podcast, you can share this episode with them by suggesting they point their web browser to realtalkms.com/133. You'll find that link in today's show notes so you can easily copy and paste it right into your email or your text. And I hope you'll take just a minute to visit realtalkms.com/walkms and make a donation toward Walk MS today. The Society is the largest private funder of MS research in the world. They've already invested over $1 billion in MS research, and I think supporting their efforts just makes a lot of sense. This year, I'm walking to honor the memory of my wife, Jean, who lived for 23 years with progressive MS, and I'm inviting you to help. Just visit realtalkms.com/walkms, and you'll also find that link in today's show notes. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.